Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, where I was right, where I was wrong about the first round of the NBA playoffs and all the losing teams in the first round of the NBA playoffs pretty much had the same thing in common. Get to that coming up, plus some baseball stuff. You know, I was talking last segment, or to close out last hour, talking about a couple of legendary coaches calling it quits. Roy Williams retiring, Coach K retiring after this year. Meanwhile, Alabama just announced that Nick Saban signed a contract extension. Saban is under contract with Alabama till he is 77. So if you saw the Coach K news, you saw the Roy Williams news earlier this year, and you thought, right, if you're a fan of another SEC team other than Alabama, and you're thinking, oh man, when is Saban going to hang it up? Because he'll be 70 during this season. Well, he just signed a new contract that will keep him there. If he lives to, you know, if he honors, I should say, the rest of that contract, it'll keep him at Alabama as the head coach until at least 77. Jim Boeheim's 77 right now, and Joe Paterno coached until he was 84. So, yeah, we'll see. Saban, theoretically, if he reaches Paterno level, he could coach for another 15 years. That would be crazy. And these guys, like Coach K was saying at the press conference, and he has said it in interviews since, this was his PR response from Coach K. But I do think a lot of it is true, where he said this isn't so much about, you know, being tired or being burned out or just the changes of college basketball. It's simply that, look, I've coached a long time. I won a lot. Now I want to enjoy my family while I still can. Coach K is going to be 74. Him and his wife are the same age. He said, I don't want to quit because of health. I don't want to retire because of health. I don't want to retire when it's too late. I wanted to retire when I still have, hopefully, you know, 10 years now to enjoy my family. And so for somebody like Nick Saban, same idea. Like, you're going to be 70. You're the greatest college football coach of all time. I understand you love it. That's why these guys do it. You love what you do. But, I mean, you know, go spend time with your family. You're 70. How many national titles do you need? Let a couple of other teams win some. So every, you know, I've said on the show many times, every NBA champion needs a Batman and a Robin. You need two stars. We know the NBA is a star-driven league, but it's not just one star. That's why we've had these big threes over the past dozen years. But go back to really the origin of the NBA, the start of the NBA. It's always been about a duo. Russell and Havlicek, Reed and Frazier, West and Chamberlain, Magic and Jabbar, Bird and McHale, Malone and Irving, Isaiah Thomas and Dumars, Lambeer, anyone, Jordan and Pippen, Olajuwon and Drexler, Duncan and Robinson, then Duncan and Parker and Ginobili, and then Kawhi Leonard. Shaq and Kobe, Garnett and Pierce, LeBron and Wade, LeBron and Kyrie, Durant and Steph, even Kawhi and Lowry, LeBron and AD last year. We'll see who wins the championship this year, but the favorite is the Nets with their big three, even if James Harden is currently injured. And the favorite now in the West seems to be the Clippers with their duo. You need two stars. So if we look at the teams that lost in the first round, the teams that their seasons are over, what do they need to do differently? What do they have to do? What do they need to address this offseason in order to have more success moving forward? Well, for most of them, they need another star. I would say that's the case for the Blazers, the Mavericks, the Lakers. Now, the Blazers, what changes do they need to make? They've already made one. The coach, Terry Stotts, out after 9 years. And we'll see who they get to come in to be the head coach. But they have now lost in the first round in three of the last 4 years and have done so with a star in Damian Lillard. Lillard is a star. But he has nobody else. You know, C.J. McCollum is not that guy. When they needed him most against the Denver Nuggets, he stepped out of bounds in overtime, caught a pass on the sideline, and took a step backwards out of bounds. They don't have that other star for Damian Lillard. And I think And I was talking about this with my brothers while we were watching Lillard go off for 55 last week. I think he's still underrated for as good as he is. But where he runs into trouble is that for those small guards, it can be hard for them to carry a team on their own, or especially at the end of games. We see this even with Steph Curry. It's why they needed a Kevin Durant, that even when they had their success, things could have been made a lot easier and then were made a lot easier when they brought in a Kevin Durant. Because for Steph Curry, end-of-the-game situations, it's challenging. It's tough. As good as Allen Iverson was, never won a championship. He never had enough help around him, and he couldn't do it on his own because he's a smaller guard at the end of the game. Right? It's you got to go in amongst the trees or even just the inbounds. The Warriors can struggle to get the ball in Curry's hands. We talked about it in the play-in game with the Lakers. They put Anthony Davis on him, and the Warriors couldn't even inbound the ball. They couldn't even get it in the hands of their star at the end of the game. A much taller Anthony Davis was guarding Steph Curry. He couldn't catch the pass. They turned it over. The Warriors lost that night. It's hard for small guards at the end of games. They need some assistance. They need some help. Lillard needs help in Portland. They're going to go on to waste maybe a legendary, that may be too strong of a word, but a great career in Damian Lillard if they don't get him more help around him. He's a great talent out there, and he's just wasting his time because the Blazers can't win. Similar with the Dallas Mavericks, although at a younger scale. Because for Luka Doncic, it's only been 2 years. Give it another decade, and then we'll be saying that's Damian Lillard territory. But the Mavericks need to get Luka Doncic help. He is already one of the best players in the league. You can't be wasting these players' prime years. And the Mavericks thought that that second option was Kristaps Porzingis. But he obviously can't be relied upon. Mostly because of health, but even when he was out there, he averaged 13 points against the Mavericks. That's not a second star. That's not somebody you could count on in the playoffs. And we've seen it from Luka Doncic that he tires out. His numbers are not very good in the fourth quarter. And it's not because he isn't clutch or, you know, he fades away. It's because he's tired. Yesterday, he had 29 points at halftime. He was doing it all himself. But he burned himself out in Game 7 of a long series against a good team. And he had only 6 points in the first 16 minutes of the second half, and that's when the Clippers put the game away. He needs more help. He can't do it all himself for 48 minutes. The Lakers, they need another star. Maybe you'll call him a third star, but LeBron can't be a true number one anymore. He can't carry a team on his back by himself. He needs help. That's why they brought in Anthony Davis. But Anthony Davis, obviously, cannot be counted on either, mostly because of health. He's not reliable. When he's out there on the floor, he may be a good player. But how often will he be out there on the floor in the biggest moments? He has not been able to be relied upon so far the last 2 years for the most part. So the Lakers need more than just adjusting their role players. Don't go out and add a three-point shooter. Right? Don't go out and try, you know, they thought Schroeder was that guy this year. Don't focus so much on just like a role player as the third option. I think the Lakers need a real boost. Because with LeBron and Anthony Davis, you can't rely on health. And without health, you can't rely on them and the stars. And the Lakers don't have enough star power at that point, and they can't win. The Celtics need a star as well, but probably a number one. I think Jason Tatum is best as a number two. He may be a star, but he's not a superstar. I mean, it's why the Celtics tried to go and get Anthony Davis 2 years ago. It's why they tried to go get Kawhi Leonard. It's what they were hoping to get with Kemba Walker. Kemba showed in Charlotte that he could be a star. You put him around other guys, but he could carry a team a bit. Right? He could put the team on his back. Unfortunately for Kemba, he's had these knee issues that he's not the player the Celtics thought they were getting and probably never will be at this point. The Celtics really need to bolster this lineup, and they acknowledge that changes are necessary by making moves already with their coaching staff and front office. Now they have to clean up this roster. They have Jason Tatum. They got to get him a crime partner, probably a Batman. I think Tatum's more of a Robin. The Knicks, they just simply need a star. Julius Randle is not that guy. I don't know if he's even a number two. He had a great year, was terrible in the playoffs. And this year was a career year. Can he come back and play like this next year? At best, he's a number two option. You need a number one. Whether that's a Donovan Mitchell, who's from New York and will be a free agent. Even maybe somebody like Bradley Beal maybe could be that guy. Or you could dream big and hope Kawhi Leonard opts out and comes to New York. But the Knicks need a true star, like they had with Carmelo Anthony. Now, he wasn't good enough to win big-time games, but he was a big-time star. They need somebody. They need a star to pair with Julius Randle. The good news is I think the Knicks restored their image this year compared to where they were a year ago, and that could help them in trying to get more talent to New York. Guys may be more willing to go and play there now than they were about a year ago. For the Grizzlies, as we look at the teams that lost in the first round of the NBA playoffs, the Grizzlies, what they need is just to get older. Yeah, sure, John Morant could use more help around him. But they have their star in Ja. They could put another guy with him. But the Grizzlies were the youngest roster to make the playoffs in over a decade. And they're like the youngest team in the league. They just need to gain some experience. They need to get a little bit older. They got some interesting pieces there, led by Ja Morant. But the Grizzlies could be interesting moving forward. The Wizards. They have Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal. You would think that's a good 1-2 punch. Maybe the Wizards just need health. Because Washington this year had some injuries, they had some COVID issues. They got off to the second worst start in the league. They were 6-17. And then they finished the year 28-21. Won the play-in game, still made it to the playoffs, scored a bunch of points on the Sixers. If they start healthy at the beginning of next year, maybe they'll be in a better position come playoff time and could make a little bit of a run. They're not a championship team, but maybe they could be towards the middle of the pack in the East. And then lastly, the Heat. Amongst the losers in the first round. The Heat, they also need a star. And they set themselves up to try and get one. You know, they made it to the NBA championship last year. And I don't know if it was arrogance or if it was punting on this year. But the Heat seemingly sacrificed this year for this offseason. They let a couple of guys leave. Now, instead of bringing back that team that was just in the NBA championship, they let a couple of role players leave. Now, as long as we have Jimmy Butler and Bam, we'll be okay. And they created some cap space so that this offseason they could go get another star. And again, I don't know if that was Pat Riley knowing how important those stars are and saying, eh, we'll punt on this upcoming season. We were just in the NBA Finals. We have a shortened offseason. It was a bubble. It's a weird year. We'll try to win this year, but then really go all in the following year. Or if Pat Riley was just confident that, hey, we just made it to the NBA Championship. We don't need these role players. We got Jimmy Butler and Bam, and then we'll try to get somebody to bolster the roster a year from now. Whatever it was, it obviously didn't work out. They got swept in the first round, and they got embarrassed. The Heat took a big step back this year compared to last year. They need to go get a star because Jimmy Butler is not your star. So they still need a true number one in Miami in order to win the East. But the NBA is a star league. And when you look at the teams that lost in the first round, they usually don't have enough star power. Meanwhile, look at the teams that are still playing. We know about Brooklyn's big three. So the Bucks went out and they got their big three, or what they believe is a nice trio. The Sixers went out, added Tobias Harris in the past 2 years. They got their trio. Right, the Hawks have their star in Trae Young, and they surround him with a strong supporting cast. In the West, you have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. You have the Suns, who added Chris Paul to Devin Booker. You have the Nuggets with Jokic and Jamal Murray, both scoring over 21 points per game. And the one exception, oddly enough, may be the number one seed, the Jazz. They have Donovan Mitchell, but they don't really have a second star, which is why I think many, like myself, still doubt the Jazz. But I will say this about Utah. How do they get here? Well, they may not have that second star because Rudy Gobert is more of a defensive player than an offensive player. But the Jazz, to their credit, do have six guys scoring over 12 points per game, and they were the number one three-point shooting team. In fact, this is what the Hawks have done well to get to this point. The Hawks have been draining threes. They set a franchise record for threes yesterday and did it in the playoffs. But they have their star in Trae Young, like a Donovan Mitchell. The Hawks have surrounded him with some good role players, have guys, multiple guys that can score double digits, and they're a really good three-point shooting team. The Jazz did it better than the Hawks. The Jazz are a little more polished than the Hawks. They play better defense. They have a little more experience. Right? They have some better role players, maybe even a better coach. But the Hawks are kind of following that same MO. But the two teams left that maybe don't have that second star, they're doing it on threes and with just a good supporting cast around their main star. Blow it up may be too strong of a phrase, but if you ask which one of these teams that lost in the first round need to blow it up and really make some radical moves, I do think the Lakers need to make big changes, even though they just won the championship a year ago. I think they got exposed this year, and things will be the same moving forward if they don't change something. I think Boston really needs to change things. That's why they shook things up in the front office and coaching staff. And even the Blazers and the Mavs, too. You have such great talents in Doncic and Lillard. Don't let them go to waste. Get them enough help. Meanwhile, the Grizzlies can just build. They're young. The Knicks can build. Try to add another star, but this year was a good building year for the Knicks. The Wizards can build, right? This was a good year with Russell Westbrook coming in. Try to build off of this year. But for those other teams, I think they need to make some big changes. The Lakers, the Celtics, even the Blazers and Mavs, they got to make, even though they made it to the playoffs and they got some stars and, you know, the Lakers just won a championship, I think they need to make some big moves this offseason. By the way, I was watching that Hawks game yesterday. I thought, oh, the Hawks don't stand a chance. Joe, did you see the 76ers had Triple H come out to work up the crowd before the game? There's a tradition in Philadelphia that before the basketball game's at home, they have somebody, you know, ring the bell. And it was Triple H, and he came out with the sledgehammer, and he had the DX shirts. They created shirts, DX shirts for the Sixers that said trust the process on the back, and it had the little photos, cartoon characters of the players. I saw a bunch of Sixer fans online saying, asking where they could get those T-shirts. And Triple H came out, and he was doing the crotch chop with Joel Embiid. It was pretty cool. And I saw a bunch of videos, and people that were there were saying the place was fired up. And I thought, oh, no way, are the Sixers losing this game? And then they went out and laid an egg. They made it interesting in the fourth quarter, but that was a 20-point game for the majority. The Hawks went on a 17-0 run in the second quarter. And I thought, oh, man, Triple H got this crowd working, DX, crotch chops, sledgehammers. It was great. And the Sixers just embarrassed themselves afterwards. Terrible. But for those that put down wrestling, when the Sixers need a big win, when they need to be motivated, who do they call? Triple H to come motivate the crowd, try to help them win a playoff game. Although after the way things went, I don't know if they'll bring him back after getting blown out for the most part. Again, they made it interesting in the fourth quarter, but they got beat up pretty good. Coming up, when we come back, where I was right, where I was wrong about the first round of the NBA playoffs. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Coming up, where I was right, where I was wrong, and the opening round of the NBA playoffs. It's the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. You ever have a problem around the house? You think, I can't fix that? Don't worry, because the Cantney Foundation Specialist can. Check them out online, CantneyCanFixIt.com, or give them a call, 843-484-3625. Because Cantney knows how tough it can be to find a contractor that you can trust. They offer warrantied solutions and a free, no-obligation estimate for all foundation repair services. They'll repair the crawl space, they'll level the concrete, and they'll repair your concrete. If it's a sidewalk, a driveway, a pool deck that needs to be repaired, they can do it. They waterproof basements, handle commercial foundations, install gutters, put a coating on the garage floor, and so much more. The Cantney Foundation Specialist, online at CantneyCanFixIt.com. Protect your toes this summer. If you have concrete around your home that's cracked or uneven, such as a sidewalk, driveway, patio, or pool deck, the Cantney Foundation Specialists offer the repair options you need to help you protect the look of your concrete, the value of your home, and the integrity of those little toes. Contact them for a free estimate. The Cantney Foundation Specialists online at CantneyCanFixIt.com or call them 843-484-3625. So every once in a while, we do a segment. I let you know where I was right, where I was wrong, because I'll give big opinions on the show, but we also try to hold ourselves accountable, because so few in this industry do. So, you know, I like to brag, like to remind you when I got some things wrong, but I also will hold myself accountable when I say something that ends up being wrong. So we got plenty of each, where I was right, where I was wrong, in regards to the first round of the NBA playoffs. We always start with a positive.
Where Luke was right.
I've said, in regards to the NBA and football, that offense now beats good defense. In baseball, you still need good pitching to win. Come playoff time, you still see, right, the home run hitters aren't hitting home runs. It still comes down to pitching. But in football, especially at the college level, and in basketball, especially in the NBA, I think we have gotten to a point where it's not so much great defense beats great offense. I think it's the opposite. And in the first round of the NBA playoffs, we had five series where a top 10 offense faced a top 10 defense. And the top 10 offense went 4-1 in those five series. The only exception was the Clippers. But the Dallas Mavericks, with that offense, built a 2-0 series lead. They were also up 3-2. And the Clippers came back to win. The Clippers, a top 10 defensive team, beat the Mavericks, a top 10 offensive team. But as this playoff moves along, right, I think Brooklyn is going to win the playoffs, or they'll win the championship, because of their offense, not their defense. The Clippers are a real good defensive team. But otherwise, you have the Hawks, right, who will just outgun you. You have the Jazz, who will knock down a bunch of threes. The Nets with their star power. I think we have reached a point in the NBA where it's not about playing great defense. It's just outscoring your opponent. Which team can shoot it better? Which team can make more threes? And in the first round of the NBA playoffs, the better offense beat the better defense almost every time.
Where Luke was wrong.
The Atlanta Hawks. Everything about the Atlanta Hawks. For one, I did not have them as a playoff team this year. For two, once they made the playoffs, I had them losing to the Knicks. Three, Nate McMillan, I said he would not be able to win this playoff series. Four, I didn't think Trae Young would be a winner. I knew he'd be a star, but I didn't think he'd be a winner. So let me focus on those last two for a moment. Nate McMillan, I owe an apology. I've already apologized to him on air. I gave him a hard time after they lost that one game against the Knicks, but otherwise he outcoached Tom Thibodeau. And for Nate McMillan, he got his first playoff series victory since 2005. Where did that come? In Seattle, back when there used to be a team in Seattle. They were called the Supersonics. You may remember them. McMillan had not won a playoff series since then. And 16 years later, he got that playoff series victory with the Hawks. He's now 2-9 in playoff series. But I have to give McMillan credit. He did a good job all season long, and he did a good job in the postseason out-coaching Tom Thibodeau. Trae Young, I knew he was going to be a star, but was he going to be a star who could also win? I did not think so. And he already proved me wrong here in year three, getting to the playoffs, beating the Knicks, and now winning game one against Philadelphia, and he looks really good. He looks ready for the spotlight, right? Taking the bow at MSG, performing well in this big stage. So both Trae Young, Nate McMillan, and really the entire Hawks team have proven me wrong so far this postseason.
Where Luke was right.
The Nets will be just fine. You can worry about their defense or lack thereof. You can worry about the chemistry or lack thereof. They rolled through the Celtics, no contest there, and they beat the Bucks in Game 1 the other night by double digits without James Harden. Game 2 is tonight. James Harden is ruled out. But for the Nets, I do think they need just two out of those three guys. For some reason, everyone was picking the Bucks to win the series. Maybe they will. I still feel pretty confident that the Knicks will get it done and will do so in fewer than seven games. I think probably five. Maybe six. Maybe the Bucks win two. I don't know how much James Harden is going to be able to play this series, but I also don't know how much the Nets need him. They are that good that as long as they have two out of their three stars. And then to focus on game one against the Bucks specifically, when you get Joe Harris and Blake Griffin combining for their performances, where they shot each over like 50% and both between the two of them scored over 30 points, you're getting those guys to chip in as your third and fourth option, or when Harden's healthy, fourth and fifth options. No one's beating the Nets. The Nets will be fine, and I feel as confident as ever that they'll still win this championship, even if James Harden is injured. They don't even, that's how good they are, that they could lose one of their stars. They still have enough talent because they still have that duo that every team wants. I think the Nets will be just fine. Game two against the Bucks tonight. I think the Nets get through this series, and it'll be similar to Moses Malone, you know, 4-4-4 of just running through all of these teams. Even without Harden, I think the Nets will be just fine. Celtics were no issue.
Where Luke was wrong.
The Lakers. I had the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals because I did not buy into the Suns. Now, Anthony Davis gets injured. That changes a lot of things. But I still have to give credit to Phoenix. I thought the Lakers would make it to the Western Conference Finals against the Clippers. I thought they were one of the best teams in the West. And I thought the Phoenix Suns were more of just a regular season team. Kind of like the Knicks. These teams that try hard and get a bunch of wins, then come playoff time, you see, oh, actually, you know, they're not as talented as these other teams. But Phoenix, and especially once Chris Paul got injured, I thought the Suns were done. Chris Paul came back, played the rest of the series, played really well. Devin Booker looks good. DeAndre Ayton stepped up big. He was getting bullied early in the series. And Phoenix looked good. They're legit. And now I would worry if I'm Denver. Right now, suddenly, I'm picking the Suns to go to the Western Conference Finals. I don't even think they get out of the first round. They have turned me into a believer in one series. And I was wrong in the Lakers. We cover this at the beginning of the show. Anthony Davis can't be relied upon, and LeBron James at this point in his career can't carry a team on his own. I thought L.A. would be fine, even with their health concerns. They clearly were not, and I should have been a bigger believer in Phoenix. I thought they were a regular season team. The Suns have actually looked pretty good.
Where Luke was right.
Talked about this last segment, but you need two stars. And the teams that lost in the first round didn't have two stars, at least good enough two stars. But the teams that are remaining in the second round of the playoffs, they have them. The only real exceptions are the Jazz and the Hawks, who have good supporting casts. But otherwise, the Sixers, the Bucks, the Nets, they made sure to actually put together not just a duo, but trios. The Nuggets have their duo. One of them just happens to be injured this postseason. But the teams that are remaining are the teams that feel more comfortable with their stars, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Meanwhile, the Lakers on paper have two stars. They just can't be relied upon because of health issues, right? The Knicks don't have enough stars. The Celtics don't have two stars. These are the teams that lost in the first round. The NBA is a star-driven league, but it's not just one star you need. You also need that crime partner. And the teams that have the best duo are the ones that have advanced.
where Luke was wrong.
To be concerned about Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz. They lost in the first game of their series with the Grizzlies. Donovan Mitchell was coming back from an injury. I did not know what they would get from him. And even though I picked the Jazz to win the series, and even after losing game one, I said the Jazz would be fine. I did say, however, that if I was concerned about any team in the first round, my biggest concern, it wasn't for the Clippers, wasn't for the Lakers, it was for the Jazz. And really, I should have been more concerned about the Lakers than the Jazz. The Jazz were just fine. Donovan Mitchell came back. He was healthy. I thought maybe he wouldn't be 100%. They really need him. Ja Morant and the Grizzlies look good. But then the Jazz rolled the rest of the series. Mitchell played really well. And they're favored against the Clippers. I would pick the Clippers to win that series. But Vegas likes Utah. And the other, you know, they're the number one team for a reason. But I should not have been concerned about Donovan Mitchell. He came back. He looked fine. The Jazz looked really good. And now it sets up an interesting series with L.A. I should not have been concerned about the – I thought, oh, boy, Utah could be in big trouble. And then once Donovan came back, it looked like a 1-8 series. It was a gentleman's sweep. They won the next four, and they move on.
Where Luke was right.
With that said, I'll take a victory lap on Ja Morant because at draft time I said that Ja was going to be the star, and I think he'll have the better career than Zion Williamson. And what's most impressive is that Ja Morant plays better at the biggest stages. In last year's play-in game, he posted a triple-double. This year's play-in game, he had a career high or a season high. And then come playoff time, he set a record for most points scored in a playoff game by someone his age in Game 2 against the Jazz. He plays better in the biggest moments. He makes players around him better. You don't have to worry about the health issues with Ja. Meanwhile, for Zion, Duke underachieved. The Pelicans so far, small sample size, only 2 years, they have underachieved, even with the NBA making rules to try to help get Zion into the playoffs. He's been injured 3 straight years. A lot more concerns with Zion Williamson. He was the clear number one pick. If I was picking number one, I would take Zion, because you have to. But I said at the time around the draft, right, these guys that come from smaller schools are the ones that have the better careers. Ja Morant makes other players better around him. He brings the ball up himself. He doesn't have to get the ball into his hands. He doesn't have health issues. He plays big in big spots. There's reasons to like Ja more, and I think he has the better career. And year two, right, 2 years in, he's turned himself into a star this year by his performance in the playoffs. He turned himself more into a household name and into one of the great young talents of the NBA.
Where Luke was wrong.
I picked the Bucks to win the series against the Heat, but I thought it would go 7 games, and instead the Heat were swept. I was wrong to think that that would be a tough matchup. I didn't go as far as to pick an upset, but I did say, right, if you're looking for tough, you know, under-the-radar matchups, look out for the Heat against Milwaukee, and I was way off. I thought the Heat would be a tough matchup, but they kind of packed it in this year. They let some players go this offseason and, cleared some cap space to try to get a star this upcoming offseason, and the Heat just were not good enough. And they got run out of the gym by the Bucks. The Bucks looked really good, but don't take that series to think that because of those wins, Milwaukee can suddenly compete with Brooklyn, because that would be your mistake. I was wrong to think that the Heat could actually make things interesting. I picked the Bucks to win the series, but I didn't think it would be easy. And in fact, it was maybe the easiest series of the postseason. The Heat looked really poor.
Where Luke was right.
Which takes me to this. The bubble deserves an asterisk last year. 3 of the final 4 teams from last year's bubble have already been eliminated this year. And the only team left is the Denver Nuggets. But last year's bubble was just so out of the order. Now, an asterisk has become a four-letter word. Oh, asterisk, right? That's condemning something. But in this case, really, an asterisk is just, it's so different from everything else. And that was truly the case last year. Like, you put an asterisk next to Roger Maris's 61 home runs because he did it in 8 extra games. It wasn't because of steroids or he cheated, nothing like that. It was just different from what Babe Ruth had to do. Just like this, what the Lakers did last year, that was different than any other NBA champion. They didn't have to deal with crowds. They didn't have to travel. They got a huge break to rest up for an older team heading into the playoffs. And now this year, the Lakers lost in the first round. The Heat got swept in the first round. In fact, the final 4 teams from last year's bubble went a combined something like, 5-14 in the playoffs this year, in the first round of the playoffs. Last year's bubble deserves an asterisk. That was different than any other season will have, and I don't think you could put it on the same level as most postseasons or champions.
Where Luke was wrong.
The Portland Trailblazers. They were the one true upset I picked in the first round. Instead, Portland as an organization is like the Titanic. Right? You go there to sink. Whether it was Sam Bowie years back or Greg Oden or Brandon Roy, all these guys, the poor Blazers. It's a cursed franchise. And now with Damian Lillard, they have their star, but they can't put enough talent around him. And I'm surprised that the Nuggets, on the other hand, got it done without Jamal Murray, their second leading scorer. And they still won that series, and they did it in six games. And one of the games, right, was a double overtime win when Damian Lillard went off. Otherwise, they would have won that in five games if it wasn't for great performances from Lillard. I was surprised. The Blazers won and won kind of as easily as they did. The Nuggets won and won as easily as they did. And now they're the only team of last year's Final Four that even made it to the second round. I'm impressed. I'm surprised. I owe the Nuggets credit. I thought they'd lose in the first round, but I was wrong.
Where Luke was right.
Russell Westbrook. He's now 5-16 in playoff games without James Harden and or Kevin Durant. He's 0-4 in playoff series without one or both of those guys. And this was the perfect Russell Westbrook series. He averaged a triple-double, but he won just one of five games and shot just 33%. He made just a quarter of his three-pointers. This is what you're going to get out of Russell Westbrook. He's going to play hard. He'll put up some big numbers, but he can't shoot well enough, and he can't win well enough without another star. And Westbrook knocked out after the first round. Granted, they weren't expected to win this series. But if you watched him play, he put up some big numbers, but then you see like, oh, he's 6-for-20 shooting. As one of those that, yeah, he shoots a lot to get his points. A volume scorer, or a volume shooter. He's got to shoot a lot to get, he's getting 20 points on 20 shots. That's what you get out of Russell Westbrook come playoff time.
Where Luke was wrong.
But the Clippers can't win in the clutch. That was their issue throughout the season. They choked last year's playoff series. This team is not clutch in fourth quarters. And yet this year in Game 6 against Dallas, a couple of days ago, Kawhi Leonard went off in that fourth quarter, made big shots, willed the Clippers to victory. And in Game 7, they buried the Mavericks in the second half. Kawhi outplayed Luka Doncic down the stretch. The Clippers did a great job on the Mavericks star at the end of games. The Clippers have this reputation of not playing well in close games, not playing well in the fourth quarter, being unable to close out games, but they did a much better job the last couple of days against Dallas to advance.
Where Luke was right.
So far, so good with the NBA Finals prediction. I got the Nets winning the East. I got the Clippers winning the West. We had to sweat it out with LA. They're still alive. I feel better than ever about the Nets, even with the James Harden issue. A little more concerned about the Clippers, but they've been playing well these last couple of games. They got much better as the series went on. And so for now, keep your fingers crossed. My NBA championship prediction is still alive after one round of the playoffs.
Where Luke was wrong.
And lastly, not the NBA playoffs, but still playoffs. I was wrong to pick the Gamecocks to win their regional. I thought with that field, with that draw, their pitching was strong enough, and they'd get just enough hitting in order to win. And when they won the first game Friday night, I thought, oh yeah, here we go. Just as I said, they got some timely hitting. Wes Clark had some big hits. Pitching was good going on to Saturday, and then things kind of fell apart. Then they struck out a bunch. Couldn't get enough big hits. Pitching was still very good. The offense just was not. And the Gamecocks lost their next two. Season came to an end yesterday, and the championship for the regional final, is tonight, not with South Carolina. I was wrong to think the Gamecocks could win the regional. I was wrong to think that they could get enough offense to win the regional. And South Carolina's season came to an end instead yesterday. That's where I was right, where I was wrong about mostly the NBA postseason. But speaking of baseball, we ended on a baseball note there. When we come back, while one door closes for Major League Baseball, another one may open. And we'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, while one door closes for Major League Baseball, another one opens. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. I just told you where I was right, where I was wrong about the NBA playoffs so far. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. You can find the show on demand there. I'll get back to that in just a moment. This is ABBA, right? Is this ABBA?
You would be right.
ABBA or ABBA? What would they say? How do they pronounce themselves? I watched Mamma Mia for the first time a couple of weeks ago.
And you openly admit that?
That's right. So the microphone's... Oh, wait, are the microphones on? Are we back from commercial break already? I thought we were just having a conversation. I watched it for the first time a couple of... It was on TV. Probably wouldn't watch it a second time. But I watched it. I will admit it. I do like some of ABBA's songs, I gotta say. No, it's not, that's not a bad one right there. But circling back, I was talking about where I was right, where I was wrong. Brad on Twitter says Damian Lillard is off to Miami this offseason. That would make sense. That would help out Lillard. That would help out the Heat. That would answer a couple of issues or solve a couple of problems. I just don't know if Damian Lillard is that guy. I mean, he has said before, he's not going to go chase a ring. He's here for Portland. He wants Jason Kidd to be the head coach. But be careful what you wish for or ask for or hope for, because if you stick around in Portland, you may go down as like, you know, that Charles Barkley. And Barkley moved around, but that great player that could never win a championship just because you're loyal or like the city. Hey, Major League Baseball, they announced in the last couple of days, Major League Baseball announced that they're going to crack down on pitchers using substances. It's the new thing in baseball that pitchers will use. Originally, it started to be, it was a combination of rosin and sunscreen. And now it's turned into, really, it's like a glue that pitchers use. And it helps them get the ball to move around. It's like the ultimate spitball. It increases their spin rate. It helps them to actually get elevation on the pitches is the big thing, right? So it's a rising fastball. Even the breaking pitches are, you know, rising and moving on you. It's crazy. They're dancing around. And the batting average is at an all-time low this year, we believe, because of what all these pitchers are doing. And it's about time Major League Baseball is going to try to do something about it. So Sports Illustrated had this great story over the weekend on this very topic. And within the story, they had different anecdotes from different anonymous players. One NL player said that a foul ball came to their dugout, and him and his teammates, they were passing it around. They could pick up the baseball with their palm. That's how sticky the ball was from this substance the pitcher was using. They didn't have to grab it, right? It was like a magic trick. You just put your palm on the baseball, and it stuck to your palm, and you lift it off the ground like that. Another NL player said that a foul ball came to their dugout, and as they looked at the baseball, they could see the pitcher's fingerprints were imprinted on the baseball. A third NL player said that when they ripped the goo off of a foul ball, it took 3 inches of the seams with it. An AL manager said that you can hear the friction when a pitcher throws a baseball. He said it sounds like ripping off a Band-Aid. Another AL manager said that it is so blatant, the cheating going on, that it's like a big FU to the league. A player in the American League said that a foul ball came into their dugout this year, and when they picked up the baseball, they saw that the Major League Baseball logo that's on all these balls was wiped clean. It was wiped out. Whatever substance they were using wiped the logo right off the baseball. An NL pitcher admitted, while remaining anonymous, of course, that he has been flagged at the airport because they thought he had explosives on his fingers, that whatever substance he was using, even after showering, even after the game, he said he went to the airport, he got flagged in security, and they had to test him. They thought he had explosives on his fingers from whatever substance, whatever concoction he came up with that was still on his hand. Another pitcher said that he used to play for a team that hired a chemist that was strictly in charge of developing what they call sticky stuff for the pitchers to use. An MLB executive said, quote, "This should be the biggest scandal in sports." And so on and so forth. Those are just some of the anecdotes from this article. Anonymous players sharing their stories this year. And Major League Baseball finally chose to do something about it. Now, back around 2003, when steroids were a big issue, Major League Baseball did a bunch of what was supposed to be anonymous drug tests. Because they wanted to see, okay, do we have a real problem here? And they did these drug tests and they found, oh yeah, a lot of these guys are on steroids. We have to clean this up. Finally, Bud Selig had, you know, guilt to overcome him. He developed a conscience and thought, okay, we have to get rid of the steroids, after he welcomed the steroids. And baseball kind of did the same thing this year. Now, that steroid, that test back in 2003, remember, somebody leaked those results about 7 years later. And so that's where we have David Ortiz's name. Ortiz never failed a drug test, but he apparently tested positive for steroids before they started testing when they did this study in 2003. And I think like A-Rod was already on that list at the time that he would fail more drug tests. Manny Ramirez was on that list. He would go on to fail more drug tests. But that's where some of those guys, specifically Ortiz, when people talk about Ortiz as a steroid user, it stems from that, which is that gray area. They're like, well, it wasn't illegal at the time, but he was doing something that, you know, certainly a performance enhancer. That came from that test in 2003. So same thing this year. They collected baseballs this year. And Major League Baseball was studying the baseballs. And apparently they found in their studies, oh yeah, something is going on that we really need to crack down on. They found, what isn't very hard to figure out, I'm sure, pitchers are doing something to these balls that we need to now enforce. And so they announced within the past week they are going to enforce the rules moving forward, because even using rosin, anything on the baseball, is illegal. You can't put any substance on the baseball. And you can put it on your hand, and then, you know, from your hand it gets on the ball, but you can't be doctoring the baseball in any way. And this is believed to have started with, yes, the Houston Astros in 2018. Not only the trash can banging, but also manipulating baseballs. And then Trevor Bauer has been the one that has really, you know, run with it at this point. The top four pitchers in spin rate this year, which is why you put this stuff on a baseball, the top four pitchers in spin rate this year are all on the Dodgers. The team that has improved their spin rate the most in one offseason in the history of baseball since spin rate has been tracked? Yeah, this year's Dodgers, after signing Trevor Bauer in the offseason. Is that a coincidence, or is there something at play there? Which also may explain why the Dodgers manager, Dave Roberts, spoke out against Major League Baseball cracking down on this. And since Major League Baseball made this announcement, Gerrit Cole, who many believe was one of the originators of all this when he signed with Houston a couple years ago. Cole, after this announcement from Major League Baseball, had his worst start of the year with his lowest spin rate of the year. Trevor Bauer, after this announcement, over the past week, maybe you watched the game yesterday against the Braves, his spin rate really decreased. He has surrendered 7 runs in 12 innings the past week. Is that another coincidence? Gerrit Cole's ERA has dropped a full run since he originally signed in Houston, when we believe this started. Trevor Bauer's ERA has dropped over 2 runs the last 2 years, when we believe that this all started for him. Are these all just coincidences? Or is this evidence of guys doctoring these baseballs and the effect it has? We'll see how much Major League Baseball truly does attempt to enforce this. Nick Castellanos, a batter for the Reds who's having a really good year, talked about this with the media the last couple of days, talking about how big of an issue this is and how baseball really should do something about it.
They don't care, you know, because if it was really a problem that they wanted, they would figure out how to, they'd put people in the bullpen to check gloves, to check hats, to whatever, you know, like the league would do something about it. But honestly, I don't think it's that much I don't think it's that important to them, you know?
Should it be, Nick?
Listen, if I truly start speaking my mind, I usually get in trouble, you know. But it's just the league has to figure out if it wants it to be illegal or not and stick by it, you know. Like, it's, and then for the pitchers to say, you know, like, oh, well, we need it for control so we don't hit you in the head, you know, fine, drill me. I'm on first base. That helps my OPS, and I get paid for that, you know. sacrifice some velocity for some control, you know. But if the league just says, like, oh, you know, yeah, you're not supposed to be doing that, but you see pitchers, just tell us that you don't give a shit. So at least we as hitters, we know.
Nick Castellanos of the Cincinnati Reds. We'll see how much Major League Baseball truly does attempt to enforce this now, because they certainly should. It's a real problem in the game that is making it, you know, when Don Mattingly says baseball's unwatchable, well, that's not helping. But while they try to figure out that problem, there is also another issue on the horizon for Major League Baseball, and this one is something that really nothing can be done about. That would be injuries. Injuries are up this year, and I imagine will only get worse. In fact, as of June 1st, a week ago today, there were already 244 players placed on the IL this year, which is up 29% from this point in 2019, the last full season. So IL stints are up almost 30%. Additionally, soft tissue injuries are up 160%. Hamstring injuries are up 193%. And I think it's obvious why. Because of the shortened 60-game season a year ago. And now having to ramp it back up to 162 games. That's almost 1,000 more innings per team this year. It's a big issue for pitchers, but even for hitters. You're having 3 times as many at-bats, you're running the bases, and you may think, well, it's not a big deal, right? They're used to playing 162 games. Sure, but even 1 year can throw you out of whack. If you're somebody who works out, say you run pretty frequently, or you lift, imagine taking a few months off. You were running, let's say, 5 miles a day, and then you stopped running. You didn't run, or you started running, say, I don't know, a mile a day. Right, for a few months, maybe a year. And then you go and try to run 5 miles one day. It's like, oh, I got to work myself back up to this. right? You're lifting. You used to bench 300 pounds. Then you stopped benching for a long time. Well, you can't just get back on that bench and pick up 300 pounds. You have to kind of build your strength back up a little bit. Same idea here. One season is enough to throw them off their rhythm that they kind of have to build it back up. And after playing 60 games and getting back to 162, it's like if you ran 3 miles a day and then one day said, all right, today I'm going to go join, and I'm going to be in the marathon. It's like, well, you really didn't train for it. You've been running 3 miles. Now you're going to ramp it all the way up to a marathon. Why don't you work your way there? Baseball players don't have that luxury this year. So we've seen a lot of injuries, and I don't think it's going to get any better because the Braves are off tonight. But tomorrow will be game number 58 for Atlanta. They played only 60 games all of last year. Charlie Morton for the Braves has already pitched more innings this year than last year. So too has Ian Anderson, Drew Smyly, Bryce Wilson. In fact, 6 out of 8 starting pitchers the Braves have used this year have already thrown more pitches this year than all of last year. 7 of 14 relievers they have used this year have already thrown more innings this year than they did all of last year. Injuries are already at an all-time high, and I imagine they will only increase as the season continues because guys have already played more this year than all of last year, and we're still only at the first week of June. Right? You still have 4 more months to go, and injuries are already up 30%. I don't think guys will get healthier as the year goes on. I think there'll be more injuries. And we've seen teams actually try to account for this. Jacob DeGrom, who granted has had his own injuries this year, but there's a reason why the Mets won't let him pitch very long in these games. Right? They're trying to ease him in. I'm a Red Sox fan. The Red Sox took Martin Perez out of a game last week when he was at like 80 pitches and he was dealing. Why? Because he's already thrown as many innings this year as last year. Right? You've got to ease these guys in. You don't want them to go out there and throw 7 innings every night and triple their innings this year compared to a year ago. Kind of have to work their way there. Injuries are at a real high in baseball this year. They've really increased. And I don't think it's going to get better as this year gets longer. Hour 3 coming up. Mayweather got back in the ring. Clemson had a future star on campus this weekend. The Falcons had to move on from Julio Jones, and the Gamecocks baseball season came to an end. We still got a lot more to do. Hour 3 coming next. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.